And Representative Gottwalt has the trophy of being moving the minutes of the meeting last time. And anybody have a question about those? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That's done. Thank you very much. And Ms. Rankin, welcome to the committee. And if you want to point out which form you're working off of, that would be helpful, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Jane Rankin. I'm the budget director at the Department of Human Services. And I am going to be talking you through the little six-page handout. I actually have just the first four pages of this handout. It's titled Department of Human Services, with a table that shows all direct appropriated funds and statutory funds. And if this table looks familiar to you, it's because, as Chair Abler mentioned, a little over a year ago, Chuck Johnson, who's the CFO and Chief Operating Officer at DHS, was before you and walked you through a table that looked like this. The difference is that now on the right-hand side of the table, you can see under the appropriations columns for the 12-13 biennium and the 14-15 biennium. These are the numbers that are captured in the November forecast. So this is the result of the actions that were enacted at the end of last session. And I wanted to, I'm going to start with at a real high level, and then we'll walk down lower levels of the budget. But I wanted to give you this large context because most of your work as committee members working with individual pieces of legislation, you're down in the weeds. You're making a small adjustment to a program and tracking the fiscal impact at that level. And you don't spend a whole lot of time stepping back and being reminded the size of the DHS budget. So what you can see from this table is that the largest source of funding at DHS is state general fund dollars, and that for the 12-13 biennium that we're in now, for those that two-year period, the general fund appropriation is $10.8 billion. DHS also has a significant appropriation that comes from the Healthcare Access Fund, and that is primarily to pay for the Minnesota Care program. DHS also has appropriations out of the TANF fund. That's a federal fund, the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. That's a federal block grant that we use to provide cash assistance and other supports to eligible low-income families. DHS, we also have an appropriation out of SGSR, is the State Government Special Revenue Fund, and that's a small fund that's basically fee supported. If you look at this line of the table, you might be struck by the increased dollar amount you see on the SGSR line under 12-13 when you look to the past years. And that is a direct result of legislative action that happened last session, where there was a governor's proposal which was enacted, which took a lot of, removed some general fund support that had gone in to pay for licensing activities and replaced it with fees. And another part of that action was an increase in some of the fees that folks pay to be licensed for various programs. So this table shows you the accounting result of that is that there's a larger now state government special revenue fund appropriation that's coming to the department. The corresponding decrease in general fund support is buried in the very large number at the top of the table. The other thing that is important to notice on this table is that there's a significant amount of federal funding that is added to the state funding that the department receives, and a lot of what we do is paid for with a combination of state and federal funds. And so you see in the lower section of the table that federal funds, and there's also some other statutory funds in there. And by statutory, we mean things that are where the appropriation mechanism is set in statute, and so you don't necessarily see a rider for it every year in the appropriations bill. Systems funding is a good example of that, where there's statutory authority for the department to use the federal share of money that we earn by running the big computer systems for our large state and federal programs. And we use that money from the feds, but it's all laid out in statute that we have that authority. So you don't have to come back every year and see a rider appropriating that amount. The end result is that for the 12-13 biennium, the total direct appropriated and statutory resources for the agency are almost $25.2 billion. If you go to the next page, then, there's a pie chart. And hopefully your pie chart's in color. And what this does is it takes the direct appropriated dollars that are summarized on the front page, and it sorts it out by some of the major budget programs at the agency. So you can see from the pie chart that the largest single program that DHS is responsible for is in the large blue slice on the pie chart. It's the medical assistance program. And MA for the 12 and 13 biennium, that accounts for 72% of all direct appropriated funds at the department. Going then clockwise around the pie, there's a red slice that is the Minnesota Care Program. And that accounts for 5% of our direct appropriated funding. And there's a table right below the pie chart where you can see the dollars that correspond to these percentages. The green slice is kind of all other forecasted programs. And just to remind folks, the forecasted programs at DHS, those are programs where the legislature has set the eligibility and other criteria in law, eligibility, what the services might be, what the payment rates are. And then if a Minnesotan is eligible for that program, they receive the services. And that accounts for all of the forecasted programs at DHS other than MA and Minnesota Care. That accounts for not quite 10% of the entire agency's budget. Then the next slice up is a purple slice with the label of grant programs, and those are essentially fixed appropriations for, it could be a block granted program like the, it had been called the Community Social Services Block Grant. It's after last session, it has its name changed, and we're now calling it the Vulnerable Children and Adults Act Block Grant, but that's a block grant that DHS allocates out to counties. And there are other grant programs in this purple slice, which you can see, I'll show you the next page has more detail on that. State operated services is up still about 3% of the department's biennial budget, and these are it used to be called the Regional Treatment Center, but now the department provides these community support services in a variety of settings and not just in large regional treatment centers. It's mostly safety net services like mental health safety net services, and that is the 3% of our budget. Central office operations is 2% of our overall budget, and then the sex offender program is the last, just it accounts for 1% of our biennial budget. So, Mr. Chair and members, if you go to the next page, there's a long table which essentially provides another level of detail below the pie chart. So you can see that within central office operations, at the top of the list, at DHS, we are broken into business areas, and each business area has administrative functions, and so that allocation of our administrative funding is represented on the table. I should say that when we're talking about appropriations, it looks like a very large amount for the very top line of central office, which is labeled finance and management on here. That's because when we're looking at appropriations, the appropriations that go for the major computer systems are included in that number. So major systems funding for this 12-13 biennium is over $100 million of that $186 million amount. It's just a function of how we do the accounting. Then you can see the next section is about the forecasted grant programs, and MA jumps out because it's a very large number, but there's also, for your information, the current biennial appropriations for MFIP, MFIP Child Care, the General Assistance Program, Minnesota Supplemental Aid, all the smaller forecasted programs. And then there's a section in the middle. In the budgeting world, we call it Program 40, which is just our shorthand accounting label for those block grant fixed appropriation activities. And you can see, you can be reminded of the scope of the activities that the department does in that area. Then towards the bottom, you see the state-operated services. Now, this is just the state-appropriated part of that activities. There's a whole another level of state-operated services that operate as enterprise activities, so where they are generating revenue and they are living on their revenue as a business. And that is not included in our direct appropriated budget here because it's not something that occurs through the appropriations bills. Then at the bottom of the list, you see the sex offender program, so you get the dollar amount for their biennial appropriation for the current biennium. And there's a negative subtraction there that says less federal financial participation, and that's really another technical accounting because so much of what DHS administers is a program where we share responsibility for the program with the federal government. The federal government recognizes that the administrative costs that the agency incurs is incurred in part because we're doing things on their behalf. We're running the program the way they want it to be run. And so they recognize that, and basically they pay us back for a portion of the administrative costs that we incur while running these programs. And you see, overall, at the department, our rule of thumb is it's about a 35% payback. So that's what that negative $63 million is on the bottom line. That's our recognition of the federal administrative earnings that come because we are administering programs that they also care about. And that money doesn't come back to the department. It actually, the way the accounting flows, it goes right back into the general fund. So we wanted to include it on here so that you get a sense of it ends up kind of lowering, in some ways you can think of that as lowering the administrative cost that you otherwise would say the state is appropriating to DHS to do the work of the programs. Okay, so Mr. Chair and members, I'm on page 4 now, and This is the page where we laid out, using the same construct of just listing all the our budget programs and the major budget activities that fall within the program. Side by side, you can see when we were back here last session, last January, and then when the February forecast came out, the column labeled February forecast, that was the dollar amounts that we were projecting would be spent for each of these activities if no legislative action was taken, if no laws were changed, if no funding was reduced. And then right next to it is the column that says November 2011 forecast, and that column corresponds to the revenue and expenditure forecast that MMB released last, I think it was actually December something, not November, but that updates in a sense where the department's budget is now at compared to where it was last February. So we thought that it would be useful for you to see, be reminded what you were looking at last session, and then compare it to where we're at now with the November forecast. When the there will be another forecast coming out the end of February or perhaps very early March, and so that will then update the numbers that you see listed. Right now we're tracking the November numbers. Primarily when a revenue forecast comes out, the effect is primarily focused on the forecasted grant programs. So it's on the programs like MA and Minnesota Care and the cash assistance programs. And there can be some technical reasons why some of the other numbers will change, but principally when you're just looking at a forecast, it's really the entitlement programs that are affected. A couple of things I wanted to point out about the numbers on this table is that sometimes if you look, I've provided the percentage change number by each budget activity so that you can get a sense of where the difference is. But sometimes there can be a technical reason that helps explain what looks like a large percentage change. For example, the line, if you look at MFIP child care, which is the second one under the forecasted grant programs, and it looks like a 34% decrease, that is partly because of actions that you took as the legislature to reduce spending in the program, but it's also partly because there was a decision to do some what we call refinancing, where we've substituted TANF money for some of the spending, and we took then, we drew general fund money out of the program to provide budget savings to the bottom line. And those two actions, those two types of decisions are both captured and mixed in on that one line. There's another, I saw another really large percentage change that I was, that was also technical. I've lost it now. Another large one on the other hand, the child support enforcement grants, if you look down, it's the fourth line in on grant programs. That looks like a huge percentage change, and that is principally because there was a legislative decision to stop doing a state-funded grant program to counties for child support activities. So there was a major decision to change how the state's resources were allocated, and it's captured in this table. Mr. Chair and members, that's what I wanted to go through to give you this kind of high-level orientation, and then Mr. Hoffman's going to come up and talk more specifically about the forecasted programs and the November forecast compared to the February forecast for those programs.
Thanks, and maybe we'll take a couple of questions now, but and a lot of these will be answered. If they're about changes, we should save those for Mr. Hoffman. If they're about the overall math, then Representative Liebling, then that'd be appropriate for Ms. Rankin.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Ms. Rankin, on the very first page, you've got a line here for lottery prize, and I wondered if that was because of my amendment to have the commissioner buy a lottery ticket, or if not, what exactly is that?
Well, I...
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, my recollection is that you withdrew that amendment. But I do recall you offering it. No, this is an appropriation for compulsive gambling treatment programs that the department runs, and it is my understanding it was established as a specific appropriation to DHS at the time that the state lottery was authorized. So it was way back when, whatever year the lottery was established. But it is funding that's dedicated to a compulsive gambling treatment program, which is part of the adult mental health division at the department.
Thank you.
Thanks. And just to point out, we'll go to Mr. Hoffman. On the front page, looking at these, just at the big picture stuff for people to get the whole overview, there's so many little content points here. Mm-hmm. For me, the most productive percentage in line on the whole page is the all funds percentage change on page one, the very bottom column of numbers, where the past bienniums were 15.6, 17.5, and then 8.6 and 4.6. And that's, and we quibbled, is it backfilled with the stimulus money or not? That's a function of the next summary column above there where you have minus 4.1 and then a positive 24. I think that the 24 was actually 35 if you took it all into consideration. I think our conclusion was that the backfilled biennial growth was 22% forecasted, as I recall. But you can't pick that up from those stimulus numbers. And then just one thing else, the part of the forest, if you look at 12 and 13, that 12,089,000,000 number, that's the same number that was broken out on page 3 of the state money, just to help you connect all these pages together. And Ms. Rankin, maybe, I don't want you to do it now, but if you could help me know which ones were backfilled with TANF, and maybe like, if you could have one more comment, the after backfilling with TANF number on page 4, or just, you mentioned some of the TANF, just to help us know the net effect so we... It'll save some mail that I won't have to respond to in the wrong way.
Okay.
And we have to be responsible for what we did do, and I accept that responsibility, but that would be helpful for maybe to bring.
So, Mr. Chair, if I can make sure I understand, on page 4 where I mentioned we did some refinancing, you want an enumeration of the kind of refinancing decisions that were made?
Just a real, like a total number. You could have one more column for after refinancing with TANF or whatever fund.
Okay.
I think that, or an addendum of some kind would be productive. This is a very good piece of paper, so thank you.
We will do that and get that back to you.
And next week is fine. I don't think we need it today.
Okay.
So, the weekends. Yeah. He's fast. Mr. Hoffman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is George Hoffman. I'm the director of the Reports and Forecast Division at the Department of Human Services. My staff and I forecast enrollment and expenditures in our large programs. Medical assistance is the largest of those, but all the other forecasted programs, which Jane has been mentioning, are also part of our business. And that's the part of our business I'm going to go on to on the fifth page of the handout that you have. And what you have there is something that breaks out the effect of the 2011 changes. Jane was talking about the movement between the February 11 forecast and the November 11 forecast. And there are two things that happened to change things. One is the 2011 session. And so we have the changes of the 2011 session. And then we have a November forecast change subsequent to the session changes. I broke out the forecasted programs into medical assistance, the other general fund programs, and the Minnesota Care program. And also, for information, showed you the sum. This is labeled total general fund forecasted programs. That's the sum of medical assistance and other general fund programs. So if you look at medical assistance, what you see there in thousands of dollars is what the February forecast was year by year for the state general fund expenditures in this program. What those numbers were at the end of session, and then what those numbers were after the November forecast. So if you look at the percentage changes, you can see that the session changes were a reduction of about 4% in the first fiscal year of the current biennium, and then 12%, 12%, and 16%. And the reason the number is small the first year is it always takes time to implement things and to get things in place. And so you can't save money instantly in these programs. And so the overall level of effect of the session changes is in the neighborhood of the 12% figure. That was the long-term effect of the changes. There were numerous reductions adopted in the 2011 session. One of the ones that had a very large impact was the limits on the capitation rates that we pay the managed care plans, and the caps on the future increases in those rates. And those made a very large contribution to these reductions.
Yeah. Mr. Hoppenresten, help me. Oh, got it figured out. Okay. And we can clarify along the way here, and this is going to get pretty deep, but to me, it's really interesting to go into this. And then we have the bulk of our time for Mr. Hoffman, so he'll go through a bunch of stuff, and we'll come back, and so note your questions. If you need to clarify something, that's perfectly good. So go ahead, Mr. Hoffman. Thanks.
If you look at the percentage changes in the forecast, those are relatively smaller, except in the first year. And in the first year, when we do the November forecast, we have 3 months of actual data already done. So we have part of the actual expenditures for the year. We have actual expenditures for a part of the year. And so we can be most confident of our forecast for the current year when we're in the middle of it. If you look at the other general fund programs, the layout is the same. The effects of the session changes were considerably more than the November forecast changes. The total general fund forecasted programs, that's just the sum of the two things above, so you see the same kind of picture there. In Minnesota Care, the session changes are especially large. Part of what was saved in the session changes is we learned that we could get federal funding for a large chunk of the Minnesota Care program for the adults without children in the Minnesota Care program who were left after the expansion of medical assistance. That had a value in the neighborhood of $100 million a year that we gained in federal funding for those. Other things were the change in capitation rates in the session, similar to the medical assistance changes. Now, I'll go on from there to talk about some additional detail on what changed in the forecast.
Yeah, I may just want to mention about capitation rates, just to clarify, just for the audience, just in a 1 minute. Can you do that?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
We pay for the coverage of most of the enrollees in the medical assistance program under managed care. And under managed care, we pay a prospective rate for the coverage of people. We have a rate table that distinguishes rates by age and gender, and to a certain extent by the location in the state. And so depending on the program affiliation, age and gender, location in the state, we set a rate for a year at a time, and that's what we pay to the health plans. We hold back a portion of those rates and pay them on a delayed basis. We hold back 9.5% out of the medical assistance rates and 8% out of the Minnesota care rates, and we call that a performance payment, and assuming satisfaction of the contract terms, we pay that money that we held back in July of 2012 for the coverage provided by the health plans during calendar year 11. So we pay that 6 months after the end of the coverage year. Now, we always have a lot of people coming in and out of our programs. And when I say most of the people in our programs are covered under managed care, when we look at the large population of children and parents, which is currently in excess of 400,000 enrollees, we have about three quarters of them in managed care at a point in time. And the main reason that it's not higher than three quarters is that the people new to the program typically take a couple of months before they get enrolled in managed care. And so people typically have an initial period of fee-for-service coverage, and then they go into managed care. It's about the same for elderly medical assistance enrollees. At a point in time, about three quarters of them are in managed care. Almost all of Minnesota care coverage is under managed care. And we are in the middle of moving the medical assistance disabled population into managed care, with an option for the individual to opt out of managed care. That was started in January. And so it's the monthly payments that we make that I'm talking about when I talk about capitation rates.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Page 6 has some breakout of what changed in the November forecast. And the subject is broken out by the same way: medical assistance, other general fund programs, and Minnesota care. And here what is being explained is the dollar change in thousands of dollars. And so you can see the forecast change in medical assistance in the row which is labeled change in November forecast. The forecast went down $163 million in fiscal year 12. The overall change in the forecast was in the neighborhood of 3.5% in the current biennium. That's a fairly big forecast change. The way we look at things, fortunately, a part of it is what I would call a good shock, which is if you look several rows down in the list of changes, pharmacy rebates, RX rebates, this is a significant portion of the overall forecast change, and it's It's a reduction in forecasted expenditures in the program, which comes mostly from the fact that that a change in federal law has allowed us to start to bill pharmacy rebates for the pharmacy payments made under managed care. We had not been able to do that before. We have been getting rebates for many years, and they go back to the medical assistance. These are rebates that we get from the pharmacy manufacturers. We send them an accounting of the pharmacy business that we did, the drugs we pay for, which drugs, how many, and they send us back pharmacy rebates. Currently, in our fee-for-service pharmacy business, we get back a value which is equal to about 40% of what we pay for the prescribed drugs in the medical assistance program. And because of this change in federal law, we are starting to bill for the same kind of rebates on the managed care pharmacy payments, which you will understand are also very large. They're of a similar magnitude to the fee-for-service pharmacy business we do. We had not accounted for this change in the forecast before because we knew that the managed care plans got their own pharmacy rebates, and we were concerned that if we were able to bill for rebates, that the managed care plans might end up getting less in rebates, and that we might have to adjust the managed care rates accordingly and lose an unknown portion of the savings we could get from the pharmacy rebates on managed care.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hoffman, you said there was a change in federal law that if you just look at the pharmacy rebates, it's about $90 million in this biennium. Is you said the change in federal law, is that the Affordable Care Act?
I believe, Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley, I believe that was in the Affordable Care Act. I know it was March 2010 legislation.
Thank you.
You're just here to help. Thank you for that enlightening point. Mr. Hoffman, you can continue.
To go on to the other things, the other forecast changes, what I did here is gave you a list of some of the largest changes that are the reasons for the movement in the forecast. A part of the change is that the nursing facility caseload has not been quite as high as we expected it to be. We have seen nursing facility recipients in medical assistance trending downward for a number of years. We have been forecasting cautiously that the decline is going to slow and eventually level off. Well, it went down a bit more than we expected it to. And so adjusting to that, the forecast is now lower. We're being cautious about this because we're right at the point where you expect the demographics of the elderly population to start increasing the demand for long-term care services. We've actually been demographically in a bit of a lull in that demand for about 10 years. And it's just going to start to pick up, and then it's going to grow steadily for about 40 years. So some folks in our department talk about it as the tsunami. It's not going to be anywhere near that fast, but it's going to be very steady, and speed is going to increase a little bit as it goes along. And it's going to make a big difference. And we're not yet seeing it. We're not yet seeing it really slow the decline in the nursing home caseload in medical assistance, but we expect that it will start to do that. Okay.
Yeah, just to clarify, we're doing clarifying stuff. Representative Kefmeyer. Go ahead.
Well, on the clarifying, I was curious as to your talked about some of that nursing home, and it's been my opinion for a while that this generation of folks that are coming of age are not quite the same as the previous generations, and that there may be a different pattern established. But I'm just curious as to where you might have gotten, if I could just get a little bit more information on the anticipation and how those numbers are calculated.
Mr. Hoffman.
You could make it come later. You don't have to do it during this time. It could be later.
Okay. In a nutshell, what we're doing is using the demographers' population projections by age and gender, and then looking at the current rates of use of programs and saying, if the current rates by age and gender of the use of programs continues, what are the demographics going to do to the population served? Mm-hmm. I've got a number of messy spreadsheets which I could share. I can probably put something in a straightforward format. One of the complications, and I don't want to get off the track here, is that we see the nursing home rates falling. We see the rates of use of nursing home falling, and we see the rates of use of elderly waiver rising. And in different age cohorts, the ratio of those changes is different. And you're right that the younger elderly people show faster rising of the use of elderly waiver than we see decrease in the use of nursing home services. And so the big fiscal challenge for the future is going to be the elderly waiver more than nursing home care, because that's the preferred service. That's the service where the rates of use are rising, and where the numbers are starting to surpass the numbers of elderly people that we pay for in nursing homes. So I may That's be helpful. Getting off track, Mr.
You can bring those spreadsheets to one of our Sunday hearings. keep going. And so we have to the top of the hour for this particular segment, so I think there'll be time to have lots of questions at the end. So you're doing great, Mr. Hoffman, so keep plowing through.
All right, caddy waiver is alternative. We have home and community based waivers, which are alternative to institutional services. They are known as waivers because they're an arrangement with the Medicaid program under which we can pay for services which would not normally be covered under a Medicaid program. The waiver for the developmentally disabled is the largest of our waivers. It's got around 15,000 people in it, and it has the highest per person cost of all the waivers. It's not mentioned here because our forecast isn't changing consequentially, but it's the biggest piece. Elderly waiver is one of the next largest pieces. It's got something over 20,000 enrollees in it, but it's not as expensive on a per person basis. The caddy waiver is an alternative to nursing home care for people under 65, and we are decreasing the forecast here in a in a fairly consequential way. It's about 2.5% lower, and so that's a significant contribution to the change in the forecast. Personal care assistance, we are also lowering the forecast because of what our experience has been with the caseload. In the November forecast, we add 9 months of actual data since the last time we did a forecast. So you expect to see larger changes in the November forecast, where we're picking up 9 months of additional data, than you do in the February forecast, where we are picking up only 3 months of additional data. Elderly basic care, there's also significant decrease here, and it's because we learned that the limits on the Medicare crossover payments, and these are the payments that MA would make for the services covered by the Medicare program, and a very high percentage of elderly people on medical assistance are also on the Medicare program. And so this turned out to have a larger effect on the payments than had been anticipated in the fiscal note on this. The MA adult expansion enrollment, we have not seen enrollment grow as fast as we expected it to. We transitioned into this expansion, into medical assistance, about 30,000 people who would otherwise have been on the GAMC program, and about 50,000 people who were on the Minnesota Care program, for a total of 80,000. We expected that we would pick up additional enrollment of people who were otherwise uninsured, and up to September that hadn't much happened in the way we expected. And so we had been forecasting roughly 100,000 people in this expansion after the initial growth, and we in the November forecast took that down by about 6%, or about 6,000 to 7,000 people. So we are not seeing as much enrollment as we expected. The enrollment of children and parents has been running under our forecast, and so we are reducing that by about 1.5% in the November forecast. But to put this in context, the recession, when we first started forecasting the recession, we raised our enrollment forecast for the children and parents by about 15%. We upped that forecast a little bit more on a couple of occasions to where a rough approximation of the effect of the recession on enrollment would be about a 20% increase, which in very rough terms is about 100,000 additional enrollees on our program. And now in the last several months, we have been seeing that enrollment run just a little bit under our forecast, between 1% and 2% under our forecast. And so that's the size of the adjustment we are making. This is a very large program, and so 1.5% amounts to a fairly large amount of money. To go back to the line on the adult expansion, if you look at FY15, it's a zero. That's because by the time we get to fiscal year 15, we're assuming this is 100% federally funded. And so we change the forecast, but it doesn't have any effect on the general fund forecast. Disabled basic care at the bottom of the list. This is around the issue of the disabled going into managed care. We assumed in the fiscal note on this that ultimately half of the disabled who were still in fee-for-service, roughly 100,000 people, that half of the 100,000 would end up in managed care. We missed a fairly important point on the fiscal note. We assumed that the cost would basically be the same, that we would pay the same under managed care as we had been expecting to pay under fee-for-service, but that there would be timing differences in the timing of payments. And so the fiscal effects we showed were actually the product of the timing differences. Fee-for-service is paid on a regular schedule, typically about 2 months in arrears of the month of service. Managed care is a more complicated story. We've been doing things over the years to slow the flow of managed care payments. So one of the things we did a long time ago is we said we won't pay for June coverage until at least July. Now, you will understand immediately that takes the June payment out of one fiscal year and puts it into another fiscal year. And we also had the withhold, that 8%, 9.5% thing that we pay later, that has the same effect. And we had a change in the 2011 session that said we won't pay for May until July. And so that also moved some of the expenses forward into another year. So those are the timing differences that I'm talking about that meant that were, as a result, we estimated savings simply because of the timing differences. The point that I missed was that mental health targeted case management is a significant part of what we pay for the disabled, only it doesn't have any state share cost when it's paid under fee for service. It's the non-federal share is paid by the counties. And so we missed the point that there wouldn't be state savings. We would pay for it under managed care. We would pay 50%, but it's the county saving the money on the fee-for-service side and not the state. That, other rate issues, other timing issues around the complexities of the shift into managed care, it looks like, if you look at this table, it looks like we have a whopping increase in 2014. If you sort out all the timing differences, really that would be spread over 13, 14, and 15. It would kind of be averaged out, and it represents about a 5 or 6% higher cost in capitation. 5 or 6% higher cost in managed care, partially offset by some differences in the fee for service forecast. But this is so not all of this has to do with mental health targeted case management. Maybe half of it does. I know the chair has taken a special interest in this mental health targeted case management issue.
Keep going. You're doing well.
Okay. Questions about medical assistance?
Representative Murphy was ahead of you. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a couple of questions. I'm interested in the 6% enrollment shift, the change, right, from your projection. And if you can give any more explanation to that, why you think that is, and then secondly, if projections going forward will change based on the experience that we're having.
Mr. Hoffman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, we are changing. We did change the forecast going forward. We do all of this forecasting work basically on a month-by-month basis, and we do a forecast month by month going out into the future to the end of, so we are changing the level. We did change the level of the forecast. The best we can understand is people are not staying enrolled in medical assistance in the way we thought they would. We thought, all right, 50,000 of these people used to be in Minnesota Care, and they had to pay premiums, and we know that the monthly premium process tends to knock some people off the program, so we, if anything, would have thought that they might stay longer in medical assistance, and that does not seem to be happening. And the best we can figure out is that the six-month income reviews with a low income standard, a lot of people have income changes by the time they get to 6 months, and now they're in a program where a little bit higher income will knock them off the program. And they're not always, a lot of them are not getting directly back to Minnesota Care. We can see, we've looked at the data, we can see numbers of them filtering back to Minnesota Care after they fall off of medical assistance, not so much right away, first month, second month, third month, but a lot of them are simply, it's one of the features of our programs that there is a lot of turnover from month to month. When we look at children and parents, in any given month, we lose 20,000 people and we gain 20,000 people. Now, that's a much larger segment. That's a segment of 430,000, 440,000. But we see something like that or even higher percentage happening in the enrollment in the expansion, and the income, the check on their income at 6 months seems to be doing something which wouldn't have happened to them in the Minnesota Care program. In the Minnesota Care program, they wouldn't have a review of income for 12 months, and then it typically wouldn't knock them off the program. It would mean they have a higher premium. So that's our best explanation of what is going on there.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more question. Mr. Hoffman, I'm wondering about the value, and maybe this is for Ms. Rankin, but the value of the balance in the uncompensated care pool that was created in the temporary GMC fix.
Mr. Hoffman.
We would have to get you information about that. I don't have any... I don't have a control of that information, right?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Hoffman, that's great. I'd love to know what the value of that is. And then I'm assuming that has been swept up into the forecast, if it was not used.
We have to
okay.
Have
I'm told...
Mr. Hoffman.
I,
Go ahead.
I'm told it was $14 million, and it was canceled at the end of the fiscal year.
And, Mr. Hoffman, I think beyond that, there's a little thing we have to pay this year in the forecast. There's some settle-up monies, aren't there? Did we talk about that? It seems there's $1 million or something. That
there's we still... our programs never die, Mr. Chairman. we had a payment that we owed the health plans, the delayed part of the capitation payment that was made at the beginning of the fiscal year, and we still have money filtering back in. As we get retroactive changes in people's eligibility, and somebody who was on GAMC up to a couple of years ago, and we made payments on their behalf in GAMC, and now they finally got a favorable disability determination back to as long as a couple of years ago, and then we change their eligibility, we change eligibility retroactively to MA eligibility, and we charge what we spent on them in GAMC in that period to the medical assistance program, and we pay a state share out of medical assistance for it, but then an equal amount of money comes back to the GAMC program, which of course doesn't exist anymore. So what we owed the health plans is being substantially, I think it was $7 million, is being substantially offset by the negative, by the payments, which are still coming back.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hoffman, I'm interested in the Adults Without Children Minnesota Care and in the early enrollment. And you said that they went in. Some of the people in Minnesota Care that were below 133% of poverty went into GAMC, but then they're dropping out. But I also see there's at least an increase in spending in Minnesota Care for adults with no children. So are those the very low-income people that are coming back, or is that just an increased enrollment of working adults?
We are seeing...
Mr. Hoffman.
We never moved quite as many out of Minnesota Care as we expected to. And so we ended up raising the Minnesota Care forecast for the adults without kids because that enrollment ended up somewhat higher than we anticipated after shifting out the lowest income people to the medical assistance program. So we ended up with somewhat more in Minnesota Care, and part of it may be this issue of people coming back from the medical assistance program, but we know that sort of movement is always occurring in our program. So it's not like we ever thought somebody's going to go to MA and stay there forever, because people fall off of our programs and they move in between programs. But we are ending up with fewer people on the MA expansion, and to a smaller extent, more people in the Minnesota Care Adults Without Children category. Now, the number, the numerical difference is a good deal smaller on the Minnesota Care side, but there is. We're forecasting less in one place and more in the other place.
Thank you.
And just to help clarify this you went through the sheet, but this booklet explains in more detail a lot of the items.
Yes.
I don't imagine you plan to go through the booklet today, but...
I didn't plan to go. You have two... You have two substantial documents in your packages, members, and one is a narrative explanation of the forecast changes. In here, you will find greater detail on these changes and detail on some of the smaller changes that I didn't mention or didn't put on the sheet. The sheet is the nutshell version of the forecast changes. This is the longer story, if you want to look at it. And if you have questions about the contents of this document, you can contact the chair or you can contact me. The other document is a larger one.
Next, Mr. Hoffman, we didn't copy it. I was going to announce.
All right.
But tell us what we can. Tell us, do the Pool Peel Pocket Fishermen advertisement why they might want to have their very own copy. Tell us what they would have got if they asked.
Both of these documents are on the reports and forecast webpage, Mr. Chairman, and the larger one that you didn't get, which should make you happy even if you don't know it, is available there, but you might need some help finding your way through it.
So this is the 80-page version with the breakdown by program size, growth numbers. That's, if you like math, and I share Mr. Hoffman's appreciation for math, although I don't attempt to keep up with him. But this is very useful if you're interested in dissecting where the money is going, what we're buying, how many people are involved, what it was 5 years ago. Very useful to get a better picture if you want to dig into one particular program or not. If you want a copy, we can provide you with one. They're 80 pages. We didn't want to burn up several reams of paper. Last year you did get one because it was the immersion day, and we thought it would be helpful to get all that. But it's a very useful document. Mr. Hoffman mentioned it's online, I printed out so I can read it offline. So
it's online in a spreadsheet version, okay. Mr. Chairman.
So there's that. So are you through presenting what you practice?
I can be through, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I'm not trying to stop you, but this is a good time for questions. If you want to know some item, we have 15 minutes of this segment, and otherwise we can go back and he can read the book to us. yeah, Representative. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Huffman, I don't expect you necessarily have this right here, but I'd love to know, of that 20,000 that come in and out of MA every month, what percent is just sort of the churn of, people who don't have one piece of paperwork in or whatever and ultimately come on? I've heard from both the counties and the health plan about, the problems of continuity of care and enrolling people and disenrolling them and switching them between health plans because they get them automatically assigned. And there's a lot of administrative churn from everybody involved with that. So I just like to have a sense of that.
Mr. Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, a surprisingly large portion are people that we have not seen in at least 10 years. A substantial proportion. I actually have some data on this, but I would guess it might be as large as half. Are people not who are on and off, but people who are kind of brand new to our programs. This was especially the fact in the GMC program, where you would, if we had 30,000 people enrolled on average, it'd be 60,000 different people in the course of a year, and in the course of 5 years at that level, 30,000 enrollment, it would be 150,000. 5 years, 30,000. We'd see just many, many people through the program, on the program briefly, and then not. So I think both things are happening. There is a lot of on and off, but there's also a lot of new people first time and a lot of people gone who we won't see again for a long time. If ever, but I've got some information available on that.
You want another follow-up or Okay. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hoffman, it occurs to me that we've got these programs as safety nets for people, and that some of this churn that you're describing could be people coming on and off of need as well, correct? I mean,
certainly.
Part of the reason that we're not seeing them for a long time and then coming back are unique individuals, is that they're coming on a program for the time that they need it and then perhaps coming out of eligibility and moving on to something else.
Mr.
This is the Mr. Chairman, Representative Gottwald, this is Senator Burton used to ask us when our forecast was going up in GAMC, where are all these people coming from who are so poor? And we would investigate and we would see that there wasn't any difference in characteristics. They looked like what the situation seemed to be is that people had a health problem. It might well be interfering with their ability to work to make them poor enough to be on our program, and then a lot of them would be on our program 6 or 12 months and then would be gone, presumably in many cases because the health issue or the health episode had in one way resolved itself and they were off, maybe back. Now, of course, we don't follow them. We don't follow where they go when they leave. But I think that's certainly a factor in what's going on. We know families with children are more concerned to have continuous coverage for the kids. Single adults, I think, are more prone to use health care episodically.
Representative Gottwald. Mr. Hoffman, I have a question. On behalf of Representative Gottwald, on the page 6, the last defined benefit, there's an increased cost that you're forecasting to that. Are you thinking more people are going to use that? Is that what you mean by the enrollment number there?
We've seen a change in the proportion of people on Minnesota Care at the qualifying income level, and so that's the basic reason for the forecast change for that.
Right. Follow up, Justin Gottwald, on that? You're good?
More people.
Well, I was hoping, I had the privilege of my own meeting, and so I got to ask all my questions. That was nice. And I know the department, if you, anybody on the committee would choose, would meet with you if you had questions on specific areas or the whole thing. it's my desire to have everybody be as up to speed as they can be on this piece. So I'm not going to drag it out, though. If you have answered all your questions, I'll be satisfied with that. So why don't we just change gears again. Ms. Vogt from the MMB is going to talk to the Healthcare Access Fund, and then we can maybe she'll... So we have plenty of time for this, which is nice. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You have a presentation for us, I think.
Yes. Yeah. My name's Angela Vogt with Minnesota Management and Budget. I'm an executive budget officer. You might need a little help from your staff to get this out there if you want to be able to see it.
Don't ask for help.
But I also think you have a PowerPoint presentation in your packet, and also a copy of the Access Fund balance itself and some related narrative that goes with it.
Oh, and by the way, since we're getting that for you, just logistically wise, let me make a few announcements while you're getting ready. We'll do that now. Then we can pay full attention. Where's my sheet? In your packet, you also have a copy of this. This is the grants that are subject to LAC approval that the Department of Human Services and Health have been granted. If you remember the discussion over Christmas, the approach we're taking here at our committee at this point is to, if members would like to have any more information on any of these, please tell Christine. This will be another kind of a vote thing, or somehow let us know you want to study whatever. There's about a dozen different things. I think the merit of these ranges from really, really good to modest. And so we're on the 9th of February, we're going to actually have a hearing on the ones people want to hear about. So if you're no one asked to hear about one of them, it's not going to be on the list. If we get discussions, requests for all, however many there are, then we're going to have all those jammed into one hearing. So please look this over. These are federal grants that the department has applied for with or without us being involved in that. And now they've come, and they're not emergencies yet. They're just grants that were here. And so we have 20 days to respond. This just came to us yesterday, last night. So we have 20 days, and so we're just going to do our due diligence about that. So that's it's interesting to see what the feds want to give us money to do. If you have your bonding ballots, do you have you turned those into Andy yet? Okay. We were those are due today. And if did anybody lose theirs and wants another one? Do you want to admit? And so how many need another ballot? Okay, we need hey, Andy will need about 6 or 8 more ballots, I think. He's busy. Christine. Please don't vote twice, and we don't have any way to judge that. So this is the honor system here.
Or IDs.
ID, there, thank you. You're helpful, too. Well, I'll just help. But the corner of the table, thanks. Thanks for that help. Anyway, so if we can get them tallied today, my executive decision has been to have the pages and Mr. Lear be the tellers. Mr. Lear is the head teller, and they will give us a diligent, accurate account of what the votes were. And then if it's done today, we'll ratify it to send over to the bonding committee. We will vote on ratifying that we certify that the canvassing committee has found that to be an accurate count. We're not going to be voting on any individual ones except by our own ballots. And then then next week, we're going to be taking up the 2 days we have. Emergency medical assistance, PCAs, low needs, et cetera, I think those are published. And if there's some topic that we've left off to look over what we did last session, I'm trying to hide from nothing, and I'm willing to tackle any hard topic we need to as a finance matter. It just means we didn't notice that one, or we are doing something else about it. Please let me know. And so Tuesday we're doing emergency medical assistance and service delivery authorities and some other ones. And I think there's ample time for that. So that's going to be coming up. So if you have questions about it, if you have implementation questions about those or so on, we'll have department staff to handle that. Is that everything? So that's everything. So let's proceed. Welcome to the committee. And I don't see any. It worked about as well as I could have done that good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My presentation is fairly short, so I think okay. We can probably just proceed.
That's probably online, too, right?
It is.
This is online for people who know how to do that. Go ahead, proceed.
So, Mr. Chair and members, I've been asked to give just a brief overview of the Healthcare Access Fund and its current status at this point. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the sources and the uses in the fund and how that works, and then what were the 2011 session outcomes that were significant to this fund, as well as a bit of an update on the November forecast. The Healthcare Access Fund has a number of sources, a couple of which are significant: a 2% tax on gross revenues of providers, hospitals, surgical centers, and wholesale drug distributors. And a 1% tax on the gross premiums of HMOs, nonprofit health service plan corporations, and community integrated service networks. In addition to that, the fund earns federal match on administrative costs, primarily that result from Minnesota Care operations that happen through the Department of Human Services, as well as a small amount of investment income and occasionally a transfer from another fund that would be enacted in law. Uses of the fund include primarily Minnesota Care grants. In addition to the Minnesota Care program, the fund also has appropriations to the Department of Human Services for their healthcare operations and healthcare administration related to Minnesota Care. an appropriation to the Department of Health for their statewide health improvement program, as well as some other smaller grants. A small appropriation to the Department of Revenue for the work that they do related to forecasting the revenues and administering the revenues that are dedicated to the fund. And a small appropriation to the legislature as well. Ooh, I got to catch up with myself now. Also, in terms of uses of the fund, there are a number of significant transfers out to other funds from this fund, and I'm going to talk a little bit about those significant transfers on the next line. The most significant transfer out that's currently incorporated into the fund is a transfer out to the general fund for related to the early expansion of Medicaid. That amounts to $427 million over the course of this current biennium, and that was meant to fund that expansion of Medicaid to those folks who are now in the Medicaid program funded out of the general fund. Those transfers go through fiscal 13 and then end after that in current law. In addition, this fund has a transfer out to the general fund related to an increase in the provider rates that occurred in about 2003. That is a transfer out of the fund of $48 million per year that's in statute in 16A. And we do that transfer to the extent there are resources in the fund to do so. And so if the fund goes into deficit, that transfer gets reduced. And finally, there is an annual appropriation to the University of Minnesota out of this fund for medical education and research costs of $2.157 million. You recall that as of the February forecast, last February 2011, there was a $231 million deficit in this fund as a result of a number of things that happened in the course of the legislative session last year, that there's no longer a deficit in the fund as of November, and there wasn't the fund was also balanced at the end of session because of a couple of significant things, one of which is an increase in the federal match we received on the Adults Without Kids in Minnesota Care that amounted to about a $185 million decrease in the state funds we had to expend for that purpose. In addition, there were a number of managed care reforms, including rate reductions and a delay that affected both Medicaid and Minnesota Care that amounted to about $72 million in decreased expenditures in the fund, and some savings from the defined contribution program that was enacted in the 2011 session. Another significant provision enacted in the 2011 session that relates primarily to this fund is we now are looking to analyze a contingent reduction in the provider tax. So that's the 2% tax on providers that produces the most revenue for this fund. Starting in November of 2011, related to that forecast, Minnesota Management and Budget was required to evaluate whether that a tax reduction was warranted given the structural balance in the fund. The statute requires us to look at two pieces of criteria, one of which is the ratio of revenues and expenditures for the entire biennium, and if that ratio is greater than 125%, we would look at doing a reduction in the fund in consultation with the Department of Revenue. The second criteria we're directed to look at is the cash flow in the fund given a potential decrease. The statute also says that any reduction in the tax would be subject to an annual redetermination. So we would look at it in conjunction with every November forecast, and that the tax itself is repealed entirely after December of 2019. We did look at this at the structural balance of the fund given the November forecast. And at that time, that structural balance, that ratio of revenues to expenditures, was not greater than 125%. So no reduction was recommended to the Department of Revenue at that time. If you take a look at your healthcare access fund balance, you'll see that the balance is zero in 2013. And so that indicates a ratio of 1-to-1, basically, of revenues to expenditures. And then just a couple comments I wanted to make about changes from the end of, from the end of session to the November forecast. We're now looking at the fund balanced at zero at the end of this current biennium and a balance of $372 million by 2015. For 2012 and 2013, we did see a reduction in the projections for revenue in the fund by about 3.6%. That was based upon a lower baseline by Global Insights, as well as some lower actual receipts for fiscal 11 that changes the baseline and moves it downward a little bit for 12 and 13. Minnesota Care expenditures on net were pretty much flat. I believe they were less than $3 million in change from the end of session. And so given those two factors, you might look at the bottom line zero balance and wonder if we had a reduction in revenues and basically no change in expenditures, why are we looking at the same bottom line for 2013? And so I just wanted to draw your attention to that provider and gross premium tax expansion transfer out that's in fiscal year 2013. That's the one that is adjustable. And so because we had less revenue in this fund, that transfer was reduced and the general fund took a hit. Based upon that, but this fund is still balanced. And that's all I have, so I'll stand for questions.
Folks, well, Ms. Ford, I thought you'd say that was the precision that we did our bill with to get precisely to a balanced account.
It was at the time.
Yeah. That was pretty hard. Thank you, Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Vogt, on slide 6, could you go back over the PMAP waiver renewal, $185 million? Is that related to the Affordable Care Act or not?
Mr. Chair, I believe that was due to a separate request by the department to CMS to expand a waiver in our federal match on the current waiver we already have. I don't believe it was authorized under the Affordable Care Act.
Oh, thank you.
I would need to double check with my colleagues at DACA to make sure that's true.
Nice try.
Yeah, that was the federal match for Minnesota Care.
Yes.
That we got. I have another question. Just maybe it's technical, but on plate 4, you mentioned that SHIP comes out of that. Does SHIP come out of the Healthcare Access Fund? I don't remember.
SHIP does.
It does?
Yep. Okay. Mr. Chair, I believe that appropriation was reduced to an appropriation of $15 million in the first year of the biennium, and then
zero
away after that.
And then, was it always SHIP? Was the $47 million Healthcare Access Fund money as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah, in the past it was that too. Just help my memory out here. Questions? No. Representative Hosh. Okay.
Mr. Chair, maybe we can try again. I'm wondering what the reason is for the balance in 2015 in the Healthcare Access Fund.
Ms. Vogt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hosh, are you referring to the fact that you're expecting to see something different? Can you maybe elaborate a little bit? I'm sorry.
I know how to ask the question the right way.
Mr. Chair,
Hosh, you can try to ask the question how you like.
Mr. Chair, I'm just asking what may be contributing to a $372 million positive balance in 2015.
Ms. Vogt.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Hosh, if you look at specifically the revenue line, so if you look at the provider tax and the gross premium tax in those 2 years, they look like they're roughly about, well, they're over $1 billion. If you look at the expenditures for Minnesota Care especially, they're much lower than that. And so we're not spending the total of what we're expecting to collect in the fund in those years, which leaves a balance on the bottom line.
Go ahead, Representative Hosh. You're going to get it yet. It's going to
Mr. Chair, what could be contributing to the reduction in Minnesota Care expenditures in 2015?
George Hoffman.
Mr. Hoffman, I know you know what they want to hear, so.
Why don't you just tell us, Larry?
It would be largely because we're expecting to shift an additional group of Minnesota Care single adults over to medical assistance when starting in January of 2014. when we have to cover single adults up to 133% of poverty.
Representative Hosh.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Hoffman, with that balance, could you assume then that there could be a reduction in that provider tax after 2015? Under current law?
I'll defer to Ms.
Ms. Vogt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hosh, the statute refers to looking at the structural balance in the fund for the biennium. We've interpreted that to mean the current biennium that we're in. And so when we get to that 14 and 15 biennium, I would expect to be looking at reducing the tax based on this current structure, okay, all things equal at that time.
Representative Hosh, summary statement? Well,
Mr. Chair, I just think the increased enrollment from Minnesota Care recipients into MA is a result of the Affordable Care Act. And because of that, we could very well assume that there's going to be a reduction in the provider tax. So those are some benefits that Minnesota will recognize.
Representative Branson.
Oh, good. Thanks. Mr. Chair, I'd just like to make a clarification. The expenditures in the Health and Human Service budget and in the Affordable Care Act come out of the same pocket, ours.
Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question regarding the Minnesota Care. There's funds that are appropriated that go back into several entities, some of which are back into the Health and Human Services, and then revenue, and then also to the legislature. So I'm just wondering what amounts, without maybe you could point me to a page that's on there, but what amounts go into the legislature and for what for, and then revenue, they go into the Department of Revenue, what that amount is and what is that for.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Vogt.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, if you take a look at your, do you have a copy of the fund balance here? I can kind of show you where to,
yeah, I think
where
so,
to look on that.
The single sheet?
Yep. If you look at the line down by the total expenditures line, about two-thirds of the way down the page, and then the two lines above that, you see one that's related to legislature and one that says Department of Revenue that looks like it's about $1.7 million per year that's appropriated out of this fund.
Mm-hmm. Representative McDonald.
Oh, yes, thank you, Mrs. Voigt. Now, and what is that money used for?
Ms. Voigt.
I can speak specifically, Mr. Chair, related to the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue does projections related to the provider tax and the premium tax to start with, and then we work with them prior to putting it in the forecast. So they do that work. They also administer the tax itself, so they're collecting it through their forms and their administration just like they would any other kind of tax. So that's what their appropriation is for. As it relates to the legislature, I might leave it to folks to explain that, other than I believe it funds some research folks and folks that do work related to the Healthcare Access Fund. But I might defer to the staff to answer that a little more closely.
Is that helpful, Representative McDonald?
Certainly is. Can I have one follow-up then?
Oh, please.
As the provider tax gets phased out then, would it be fair to say then that monies that, and there's not a lot of monies, but that money's allocated to the Department of Revenue, then that too would be phased out or unnecessary?
Ms. Lowe.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I think that is a, there are unfunded programs that are still continuing in current law, because that particular question you asked was not addressed in the piece of law that instituted the contingent provider tax. So, in fact, what we have is a situation where, as you say, those appropriations will continue and those activities will continue to go forward in the law, technically right now, even though the 2% provider tax may be reduced at some point.
That'd be a discussion for future legislation, no doubt, as we get closer. Okay, Representative Liebling.
Oh, I'll pass.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought Representative Hosh's comments deserved at least a little bit more perspective. For those inclined to be really giddy about the UCA, I should remind people that as the federal government begins to take people off our hands so nicely and generously from medical assistance all the way up to 400% of federal poverty on an extremely rich benefit set, They claim they're going to cover it all for a while, but eventually that dramatic expansion of people on public programs comes back onto the taxpayers of Minnesota. And I would also point out that under the MA program, we do a great deal of cost shifting by underpaying our providers. So there's a whole nother picture of cost coming at Minnesota, thanks to our friends who implemented the UCA.
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, we can talk about this all day, but the fact of the matter is, things that this legislature has taken pride in, and I have heard folks take credit for the reduction in the possible reduction of the provider tax into the future. We need to realize that for every argument that you know, if the provider tax is going to go down, is a result of the Affordable Care Act. So if we're going to take credit for some of those positive things, we also need to give attribution to what is helping us be able to do that, and that is important to recognize.
I appreciate that. Anybody else? We got 2 minutes yet. So. But I think this has been productive. Representative Hosh, just in the interest of hopefully the facetious thing, if you look at the and Ms. Vogt, the total revenues, 2015, the first three numbers are 666. I don't know. Just a little eerie to me. So maybe they're not as reliable. Maybe we should be a little cautious here. Anyway, does that help? Is that a good way to close this all? Yeah. Representative Liebling, you want to have your chance.
Well, Mr. Chair, are you a devotee of the idea that the world is going to end at the end of December because of the Mayan calendar?
Well, obviously the MMB does not think so because they gave us numbers into the future, so they're planning. So we're going on one heck of a vacation in December. Anyway, I think we're off to a good start. I think that my view of leading this group, and I see myself as a fellow with you all, is that the more we all know, the more we can do good work. We still have work to do. We'll discuss that more next week, but I think at this point we're pretty much on our own budget-wise to solve our own problems in our budgets. Fortunately, we're stable, praying that the end of February forecast is as good as this, or maybe a little better. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you all Tuesday. Thanks.